Today is October 14th, 2020, and this is episode number 356. No, it's not. It's a complete and total lie. So, this is episode number 536, the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. Also the host of this very show. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group. And pouncing his way. See, last week, Charlotte flounced. So this week, pouncing his way from the Big Apple to TMO Towers is my favorite curmudgeon. John Keat. John?
Brian, you may be the host with the most, but I am the guest with the rest.
Sure. Sure. All right. I'll take that.
How are you, man?
Good. Busy. Busy. I'm otherwise quite good. We have a little fire, weather, heat wave thing going on again.
Oh yeah, are the fires are you still feeling effects from the fires? Are they nearby enough that they're still causing trouble?
The fires themselves never threatened us here in Silicon Valley. The smoke sometimes pours into the valley.
I see.
But I don't actually even think we've gotten our fair share of smoke, to be honest. I think Las Vegas gets more smoke than we do from California. Of course, Las Vegas is getting, because the fires are worse down south, and then they're also bad north of Silicon Valley itself. As far south as the wine country up in just north of San Francisco.
Yeah, a bunch of years back when I did that trip, I did a road trip around the country. Yeah. I went north of the redwoods and whatnot, north of even the wine country, and there were some bad fires up there. This was 5 years ago, but I just remember driving through them, and the fires would billow up over onto the pavement, and so you're driving through what seems just like the hellscape.
Yeah,
because the embers and stuff are trailing over the car. Some of the fire is lapping at the car as you're driving through parts of it. Luckily, they weren't prolonged like some of the poor folks that are really deep in the woods, right where their homes are, and you know, they're driving surrounded in trees like that. But it's pretty, you know, scary, to put it mildly. So yeah, poor folks. I hope that goes as well as can be, and the fires go out, and that everyone is as safe as can be. That it's just stinky times.
It is a mess, and I don't think up in these parts we currently have major fires going on. But we did have another dry heat wave roll in, so it's October and it's 88 degrees, you know, and it should be in the 60s, and it's dry. It's apparently dry wind actually coming from the ocean, so I mean, conditions, you know, could quickly deteriorate again for more fires.
Well, let's hope you guys get a little rain then.
Yeah, I hope so. It is coming up on rainy season, so anyway, this is the
elevator chat with you, with John and Brian.
That's right. That's right.
Get your best elevator chat podcast right here.
Of course. I should mention LinkedIn Jobs is sponsoring the show. I'll tell you more about them later in the show. But what we're talking about before then is Apple's little media event thing that they did yesterday.
Yeah, sounds good. How'd you like the show? How'd you like the announcements? High-level thoughts?
Here's one thing. I said this morning in the TMO meeting. I said that when the pandemic is under control, Apple is likely to go to a live media event during WWDC, and that everything else is going to stay virtual.
Interesting.
They have put a lot of effort into making these virtual things sing. And I know that you, I, and longtime listeners will be shocked by this, but you were a little complaining about some of the people. But by and large, this streaming media event that they're doing is rock solid.
Well, you might be surprised to hear that. What you say is reasonable. But moreover, their presentation skills are such garbage that them just being completely canned at this point is no loss, because they're just plastic SNL, cue card reading robots up there. And what's worse is, Tim Cook is just an awful plastic man presentation giver.
He has improved. Man, would you please give him credit for having improved?
No, he stinks. He stinks.
But he has improved. I don't think he stinks, but he has gotten so much better than he was. Much better. Night and day difference.
But and it's true. It's not a fair comparison from Steve Jobs. But even Elon Musk, who is, by the way, not a good presenter, but at least he can speak off the cuff. He doesn't have to read these things. I mean, people have lived this for years. You should be able to speak without rote reading every word of a sentence out and talking about something with natural enthusiasm. And yes, unfortunately for Tim, he's born with a kind of a plastic demeanor, and that's not his fault. That's the best he can do. But what was worse is all the people, whoever is their media consultant at Apple, has forced all the other people to have these mechanical, awful Disney It's a Small World automaton hand gestures that couldn't be more fake and awful. And I'm positive all those people are far more dynamic than Tim Cook, which again is a low bar, but they were made. It was almost like someone at Apple says, oh yeah, the way that the train wreck that is Tim Cook's presentation style and natural demeanor, we need to replicate that amongst all the other people, which is, it's horrendous. It's just watching, it makes me want to claw at my own skin,
because it couldn't be more pathetic. I have such a radically different experience when I'm watching these things.
But considering that they're going to just make the people read these cue cards anyway, even when it's live, what's the point? They might as well get some higher production value on this stuff. So I just don't care. They don't have zero people that can do a good presentation. Except for Craig Federici, who can sometimes talk without reading cue cards.
Let me refer to my notes. So what did I call you? I called you my favorite curmudgeon. I guess I'm getting what I asked for. I think they give us quite a bit of production.
You criticize me, but here I am praising one of the people who can actually do a presentation. Craig.
Oh, that's so generous.
And you dismiss that out of hand, like all I said was negative. Craig can present. He can present.
So what I see is that Tim Cook has learned to give a lot of the stage time that would have been his to other people, probably because he knows he's not awesome at it. And I also see...
If that's what you mean by him getting better, I agree.
No. Even he is on screen, he's better. He feels more natural. He smiles more naturally. I think his pacing is better. He has radically improved. It's certainly not Steve Jobsworth.
He is a walking Valium.
Way better than like anything Steve Ballmer ever did. Anyone else in the tech world with the...
At least Steve Ballmer was able to remember one line without a cue card. It was the only line he remembered. He could speak without the cue card, but at least it was one. I don't know. I don't know what's better, just an ad-lib train wreck or this plastic man
delivery.
You don't
think Steve was using any kind of cueing? He just made
developers. You're besmirching Kermit the Frog, and I am offended. I am offended by that.
I don't think I've ever told you this. I had the fortune and misfortune to see the last Microsoft CES presentation. And so this was with Steve Ballmer, and he brought up, he had Ryan Seacrest there to be like the MC. And it was so weird, because it's like Steve Ballmer's like looking over at Ryan Seacrest for like, like his cues, and it was it, the whole thing. It was off. It was in many regards way worse than that Samsung Broadway.
Oh my gosh!
Horrific event. Okay, hold on. We have that's Mr. Stoat. Commander Ichabod found Mr. Stoat and decided to add his opinion. So
that's funny.
I don't have a mute button with this current configuration. So give me you talk for a second. I'm going to get Mr. Stoat, take him out of the field of operations.
So I guess it's a fair point saying that. It could always be worse with presentation styles that could be more awkward.
Do you remember that Samsung event?
Yeah,
that was so bad.
So you make a fair argument in that things can always be way worse. I agree. I agree. The converse is not proven by that assertion. That doesn't make things good with Tim Cook. It doesn't make the endless SNL reading of cue cards good. But anyway, I think our long-standing agree to disagree point on the quality of Cook's presentations can remain long-standing. The too long didn't read version of this is I agree it's fine if they go to a canned thing because they only have one presenter that's worth a darn, and that's Craig, and he's not part of the iPhone releases.
Okay, let me give credit where it's due. So Dave Hamilton pointed this out in direct response to me saying that that Apple would go to one live event with multiple streaming events like the ones the two we've seen in the last month, and that is that the one thing you're missing there is the hands-on time and the face-to-face time, and so you know some journalists are invited to go to a hands-on room. And a very select few journalists are given one-on-one interviews with either product managers or Apple executives. And you're not getting that with these canned events. But what Apple could do is simply start, having teams set up in San Francisco and set up in New York City for hands-on events, like in a hotel room.
Well, and frankly, they might get better answers during some of those because the Communist Party like interviews they do with their blessed journalists are just beyond that, waste.
No, that's not going to change.
Right. Well, no, what I'm saying is I agree that's not going to change, but the value of those hands on, you know, talking to the party line at Apple PR is useless. But if you have enough of those smaller ones. You never know what might leak, right?
I hear what you're saying there, but you call them useless. And what I would say is that they are useful to Apple because they get the press that Apple wants. So they're useless to you as a consumer and as someone who pays really close attention to what Apple's doing. But for the rest of the world, it's getting Apple's message out. So from Apple's perspective, it's quite useful.
It's not the rest of the world. It's just, I agree what you say. It's useful for Apple, but it's just more PR press release garbage. So whatever. The whole event is, like I said, turning into plastic land at this point. So I'm fine with it. It's a fair assertion. It'll be interesting to see if how it turns out. But knowing what control freaks Apple are, it seems well within the realm of plausible.
Makes sense. All right, so let's actually talk about the event, about the products announced. Do you care about the the HomePod Mini?
Yeah, it was just interesting in the sense, I think the price point is actually great. $99 is a very sweet spot.
It's great.
I don't know how good the sound quality is. I mean, the sound quality on the regular HomePod isn't that great from an audiophile's perspective, but... So this will be even lesser in that regard. It has one feature... And that the regular HomePod doesn't. It has the ultra wideband chip. The U1 that they're calling it or whatever.
Yes. The S5 chip is what's in there.
Well, the S5, but it has the ultra wideband, like so that you can bring things, you know, near field.
Yeah. Right.
So the regular HomePod doesn't have that, and it was kind of weird that they they didn't at least update that part of the regular HomePod, it would have been a natural to do so. So,
yeah, I wonder if they're going to do a HomePod 2 or even a HomePod 1.1.
You would think so, because right now they're using a pretty significant chip in there, right? I think it's the A8, and going to the S series, which is basically like the Apple Watch series, right? It's just a way smaller chip, probably cheaper to produce. It probably gets economies of scale going up with the watch too, so there's some advantage of that.
Yeah.
So you would think they would move to that, put in the ultra wideband communication thing, and otherwise keep it pretty close to the same thing. But that was the only thing that was of note in that regard. But it seems like a solid product. I think it should sell well. Hopefully, you could see that as instantly doubling Apple's smart assistant presence market share wise, because they have a really small market share there now. I think it's like probably less than 5%. So if they get up to 10%, that probably is a significant thing for them.
Commander Ichabod agrees.
There you go. That's the seal of approval.
Indeed. I've long been saying that I wanted Apple to release some kind of HomePod companion device.
Oh, the most significant thing, though. They finally fixed your bug on Apple
yes.
TV with the release coming out, so that you can leave it hooked up to your Apple TV as speakers, and it will remember that when you switch back and forth with other sources.
Yes, it took way insanely too long for that to be the case, but it's finally here and I'm very happy about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So I've long wanted Apple to have some kind of cheaper device. I've got an insane amount of HomePods in my very small home. But most people would not do what I've done, and nor should they do what I've done. And
I have four. How many do you have?
Well, I have four, but my place is probably a very small fraction of yours.
So how do you have mine? I have a pair near me acting as a stereo thingy. And then I have one kind of in the bedroom area, one in the kitchen area.
Yeah, I've got one in my bedroom. I've got one on my office desk.
Right.
And then two on my TV, because I've still not bothered to get a soundbar and a proper sound system for my TV. And that's largely because the HomePods are...
The soundbar stink, man. I'm telling you, the HomePod is better than a soundbar. All soundbars stink.
Okay.
All soundbars stink for the reason is that very few movies are real Dolby certified and balanced. And so the soundbars use their own software to guess where, the vocal channel is versus the other channel. And a lot of times it guesses wrong. And so that's why you get this, it's too quiet, I can't hear what they say. And then your ears are melting because the background, the rumble of the dinosaur or whatever is off balance. And since most things are not properly, Steven Spielbergized with the soundbar just constantly guesses wrong. You don't have that issue when you just have a pair of stereo speakers. So it's odd. I've disabled all the soundbar things I have and just put two speakers on them just to avoid that issue.
Well, what I would prefer to have is a proper surround sound set up with a subwoofer and probably a soundbar as well. Regardless, I've got two HomePods that I'm using as a stereo pair for my TV. I've got one in the bedroom that I use, and then I've got one in my office that I use for my TV that's on my desk. And and my place is, I've got the one of the HomePods in my living room is 15 feet away. and the one that's on my desk is 3 feet away, and the one in my bedroom is definitely. But the point is that that's like crazy. That's a crazy amount of expensive HomePods for a small home. And I wanted but I wanted to also be able to just speak to the air and have all of my HomeKit stuff done. I don't want to speak into a device. I just want to speak to the air and have it work.
Right.
Okay, just to let you know, right now is the time for snapping Mr. Moose's neck and spine as vigorously as possible directly underneath my desk. this is apparently the time for that. So get a puppy, they said. It'll be fun, they said. I love this boy. And for most people to do that, to use HomePods to be able to speak to the air wherever you are, that's just an unacceptable expense, especially when Amazon is out there basically letting you do it for a $0.95.
Right.
So the HomePod Mini helps bridge that gap. I didn't expect Apple to release a $29, you know, HomePod Express or something like that. I did not expect that. I don't think I expected $99 is probably the price. If I'd been really pressed, I would have said, no, Apple will probably come out with something for $99. And I don't think it would have had as many features as the device they actually announced. So I'm pretty impressed with the HomePod Mini.
I'm not just impressed. I think they came down below what I expected. My hope is what they'll do is they'll reprice, by the way, the regular HomePod to $199, and then they'd have a pretty compelling lineup there.
Even $229.
Sure.
Even $229. Yeah, that would be nice if they repriced it. Maybe the HomePod 2 will be a little, I mean, maybe they'll figure out some ways to make the HomePod 2 a little less expensive.
Anyway, solid there. Not a terribly exciting. The intercom feature is nice. It works with everything except the Mac, which makes no sense to me.
That is a little crazy. Why would they do that?
Yeah. What's weird is, you know, when the first Apple processor chip Macs come out, they'll be able to run iPhone apps. So I guess you'll be able to use it that way. But it's just kind of a little weird. Could be it.
Yeah. But still, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, the Mac often gets short shrift on some of these things, right?
So they announced the HomePod thing, and then the rest was really the iPhone show, and they had kind of a nice lineup of iPhones now. They announced kind of the regular iPhone, and then there's the Mini, which is a smaller version, which is really cute. It's a little bit smaller than the iPhone SE, a little bit bigger than the SE 2, the latest one, a little bit bigger than the iPhone 5 or original iPhone SEs, but it's all screen, really nice, has all the full features of the regular iPhone 12.
Yeah.
It's super cute, super cute. And then they had a really pretty swelteringly cool boosted iPhone Pro.
Well, hold on. Before we get to that, though, like as they're introducing the iPhone 12, and I knew that there would be a Pro, and because there were only two lenses on the back, right? Of the 12. But from a feature standpoint, they're announcing all these things. Like, what on earth is the Pro going to have besides a third lens to make it the Pro model? Because the 12 is pretty significant. And if anything, I think that the delta between the 12 and the 12 Pro is smaller than it was between the 11 and the 11 Pro.
I think that's right. Basically the extra lens, the lenses themselves are improved on the Pro, and LiDAR is available on the Pro. Those are the big, you know, the big takeaways. And the very high end, the Max version, not only are the lenses a bit better, you get a bit more zoom. You get, instead of 2x optical zoom, you get 2.5x optical zoom on the very highest end Pro Max. But yeah, otherwise they're pretty feature parity. And what I also like is there are more colors available for the regular iPhone 12. I really like the way the red came out this time. I think they have the blue, a red, a gold, silver, and gray on the regular, and they have fewer color choices on the Pro model. In some ways, the regular iPhone 12 is well, if you like the colors better, it's more compelling in that regard.
The 12 is a fantastic device. The 12 Mini is a fantastic device if you want the smaller form factor. They're both fantastic devices.
It's super tempting to get the Mini for me because I do like the pocketability. It's almost the size of an iPhone 5, which is really small. It has all the same storage ability. The other big difference is there's only 4 gigs of RAM on the regular iPhone 12 and Mini, and there are 6 gigs on the iPhone on the Pros. But yeah, if you like the compact form factor, the Mini is, I think, is going to sell like crazy.
Yeah,
it's a cheaper model. You know, it starts somewhere between $699 and $729, depending what carrier you get it on. So the price point is pretty attractive. For me, it's all about, like, I'm hoping someday Apple actually makes a phone with 5x zoom. That, to me, that's the big, like, the biggest feature that's been missing on the camera for long time.
But they told us it had 5x zoom.
Yeah, I gotta say, this is one of the most, this show, not for the plastic presentation style, was one of the most depressing things to me, because I think Apple lied and or misled people on two things. One was the pricing. They announced that the pricing, you know, for the phones was like $699 and $799 and whatever, the 99s. But it turns out that's only if you get it on Verizon and get a Verizon version, or on AT&T. If you get a T-Mobile or an unlocked phone, it costs $30 more. And there's just no reason to have misrepresented that, right? Just be upfront with that and note it. And the second thing is they announced it was a 5X optical zoom.
Hold on. On the pricing thing, they did say it starts, right? So is that, I'm with you on what you're about to say on the optical zoom, but I think it's legitimate to say that it starts at X price if it does start at X price.
It's just one of these nickel and dime mislead. Just be upfront on the pricing.
Or go ahead and make the pricing actually the same. You could do that.
Right.
It's just,
and the pricing's more insulting because I'll tell you where they lied. They're like, and we didn't change the price. Well, you did change the price because you are no longer including headphones or a charger, which are worth between, you know, $40 to $60. That you now have to buy if you need it. Most people probably don't, but don't say you kept the price the same when you're including less in the box. You certainly did not. That's an increase in price. So it's just this amalgamation of, you know, tenuously, maybe technically correct in some versions, but kind of basically misleading statement that they didn't have to make. It's a great product. It's a great show. If you're increasing the price, just be upfront with the price. You don't have to emphasize it, but just say what it is. And don't make misleading statements that we kept the, you know, the price is the same. Yes, technically that's correct. The price is the same, but you get less for it. So you did not maintain the price. You actually increased the price and reduced what you get relative to that. And then the other thing was the 5X zoom. I was so excited. Like, they could have kept every feature the same as the iPhone 11. If they just gave me a 5X zoom, it would be an instant purchase for me. And what it turns out is it's completely misleading. What the phone has is not a 5X zoom. It has 5X range of zoom starting from the ultra wide camera. So the actual zoom of the telephoto is 2.5. And what they're saying is, yeah, if you zoom out, you can zoom out 2X and then zoom in 2.5X. So that produces 5X of range. Well, that's just misleading. Say what it is. It's a 2.5X zoom is what it is on the iPhone 12 Max and Pro. And it's a it's not a 4X zoom on the iPhone 12. It's because it uses the same shady thing where you can zoom out 2X, yeah, using the ultra wide, and then zoom in 2X using the telephoto. That doesn't make it a 4X zoom. So it's just one of these totally unnecessary misleading things. Why do that? It's fine to label it what it is. People will still be happy because the camera is much improved. The low light ability is much improved. The software that makes the shots with Fusion and other things and using AI is much improved. There's plenty of good things to do without just resorting to this kind of skeevy behavior.
Yeah, I was fair enough.
Hugely disappointed because it was just unnecessary. There was no need for it.
Yeah. No argument here. You presented the points well. I don't have a problem with the pricing because, like I said, I think that it's not just technically accurate, it's accurate. It starts at a certain price. I understand the spirit of your complaint. I don't think Apple did anything.
You know, it's misleading
that.
when they said explicitly, and we haven't changed the price, meaning like, oh,
well, okay, that's a good point. That's a good point. We haven't changed the price, and yet the price is higher starting with some carriers.
So again, there was no problem with it. Like they did improve the phone a lot. I mean, the processor alone in that thing is really from magical unicorns brought it to Earth. It's insane. It's a 5-nanometer chip. There's 10 atoms of width blowing that circuit through. I don't understand. I can't believe that in my lifetime I'm seeing this.
Yeah.
Agreed. So that is just magical. The processor is like, you know, probably overall, they said in some places, you know, it's 70% faster, 50% faster. This during a time where we get an Intel revision of a chip and it's like 7% faster and we're going, woohoo, right? So they're blowing the doors off on so many things there. It's fine. It's like a fundamental, you know, the first time I just view Apple as being so honest and forthright and generally good. Yes, they make mistakes. They don't do everything perfect. It's hard to manage a lot of the difficulties that China presents to them with regard to how you release products in a government like that, all those things. But it's a company to me that has consistently, you could show, is trying to do its best to be forthright, honest, and good. And this was gratuitously misleading for no reason.
Yeah.
Just not.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I've belabored the point enough.
Yeah. I readily concede the Zoom point readily. I concede the spirit of your price complaint, but it's. I don't know that
pedantically, technically correct. I understand.
No, it's not. But it's not that. I mean, it's like there was a whole rest of the media event that had a lot of really awesome stuff that they were showing us. Those were two minor points, and I agree with you. It seems like unforced errors that they don't need. There was no reason to make the one error, and they should probably just sort out the pricing in a way that is. You know, doesn't have a penalty with other carriers, but they're great devices.
They are great devices, and I really like the range. I like that we have a mini model, and it's not underpowered and not, you know, really second rate at all. And I like that we have, I mean, it's a jumbotron now. This new iPhone 12 Pro is going to be 6.7 inches. It will be physically the largest device phone Apple has ever made. It'll be even larger than what was to this point. The largest phone was the let me ask you, do you know what the largest phone Apple made up until this point was?
No.
It's the 8 Plus is the largest one they made. So it'll be physically a little bit bigger than even the 8 Plus, although it's going to be all screen. And
you're talking about the 12 Pro Max.
The 12 Pro Max. It's 6.7 inches of screen, too. When you think about that, the iPad mini is 7.9 inches. It's basically an inch difference between an iPad and this phone. It's kind of awesome. So, I just like the whole range. I love how much they have packed in the entire range. I wish they made it a little bit cheaper rather than actually making it more expensive, especially with them not including some of these, the charger and the headphones. It might have been an opportunity for them to try to knock down the entry-level price by maybe $50. Would have been cool. On the other hand, they're still selling the XR and some of the other older phones as even more entry-level. So, it's reasonable for them to say they've got that part of the market covered as well. But yeah, it's a solid device, solid upgrade. I'm going to upgrade while still hoping that eventually they'll release a 5X zoom, real 5X zoom camera. Getting? I'm going to get the Max just because for me, the extra zoom is like the killer feature. And even if it's only, you know, 2.5X instead of 2X zoom, it makes a difference. So that feature alone is really killing it for me. It has a few other pluses as well, but to your point, the delta between the high end and the low end of this range isn't that big.
You mean
from what are you gonna get
from the 12 and the 12 slash mini to the Pro, the Deltas?
Correct. Yeah, okay, right. It's you know, it's mostly screen size difference.
Well, and there's the extra lens, there's the LiDAR, which, by the way, it's interesting to me that the LiDAR is finally being used, because LiDAR was introduced on the iPad Pro but wasn't really used for anything.
There is one app. There's this one app, and I forget the name. So, you know, I've constantly had this. Yeah, please give me your list of AR, because you kept telling me how big AR is. And of course, nobody uses AR for anything. It's useless. And it, actually, technically, what I'm saying is still true. It's useless, except for this one app that does this real. It uses the LiDAR, and I think it's called Canvas. And it basically. If you're in a room or a house, it turns your iPad and now your iPhone into a 3D scanner, and you just walk around kind of like painting reality with your iPad up and down the walls until you scan it, and then it will you can say process this, and the company will process it and give you CAD drawings, accurate CAD drawings of your house from this, and on top of it you have a 3D model that you could use that looks like your house in 3D with all
right.
the
so that's,
textures and maps.
That's one
cool.
app that was using the iPad Pro's LiDAR. Right. And other than that, it's pretty much gone unnoticed and unused. With iPhone 12 Pro and Pro Max, the LiDAR data is being used extensively in both the
camera app,
the camera app itself, and possibly at an OS level that so it can be used for other things, and that is good. I am pleased by that.
The autofocus is way faster because of the LiDAR, faster and better.
So my other understanding, though, was that the chip in the A14 Bionic has additional cores dedicated to computational photography that the 14 and the 12 does not have.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the big tell is the regular Air has the A14, right?
The regular
and
iPhone.
This is
12. You said Air.
The iPad Air has
iPad
the
Air,
A14.
Right.
The regular A14, stop, nothing more. This is the A14 Bionic, right? So it has the extra
stuff.
Wait,
is the Bionic in the 12 too?
It's in the 12. Oh, yes, it's the Bionic is in all of them. That's why it's like
hopefully,
I said, there's
listen, different. No one listens to the show, so I'm really hoping that no one noticed that I got that wrong.
But it has less RAM. So that's the big difference. There's less RAM on the one in the regular 12.
Am I correct? There are additional cores that are actually, those cores are probably there in the 12. They're just turned off. But there's additional cores dedicated to computational photography in the 12 Pro.
I don't think they're additional to the 12. I could be wrong, but my understanding is they all use the Bionic. They all have the same cores. The big difference is RAM between the regular 12 and the Pro.
I could be wrong.
Might be right.
Well, I might be, but you know, I was doing live coverage.
Yeah, it's tough when you're in a flood paddling of information there.
Yes. That is the case. So I know for a fact that when they were talking about the 12 Pro, that we got that image. And I don't think an image that said that there are these six cores. And I don't think we got that same image for the 12. That was the thing.
Okay. I cannot dispute one way or the other. They both use the Bionic is one thing I definitely know. Anyway, they're pretty close. I think it's kind of interesting. The one weird thing is that I noticed is that they don't have nighttime mode for the telephoto lens, which is really annoying. Like, why not?
There's probably a reason, though.
I'm sure there's a reason, but I want to know what it is, because I actually do that a lot of times. If you're walking along the water in Manhattan and you want to take a nice picture of the sky, and sometimes you want to zoom in because the tighter shot is cool, and you really could use that nighttime mode, and it just seems like a weird thing not to use. The whole range is great. So did you say which one you were likely to get?
I did not. I'm going to get the 12 Pro. I do want the extra lens, and I do want the extra photography abilities.
You're getting the Max or just the regular Pro?
The regular, I like putting it in my pocket, and I spend a lot of time on my iPad. So when I want the larger screen, I go to my iPad in the first place.
But you won't get that extra 0.5 zoom.
That is true. I recently got, the week before I got Ichabod, I bought a new DSLR, a new Nikon.
I see. So you don't need this stinking iPhone.
I still take lots of pictures with my iPhone, and I will enjoy taking pictures with the camera on the 12 Pro for sure, but. If I'm really that serious about taking a zoom picture, I'm probably going to be using a dedicated camera.
So, Apple fulfilled everyone's greatest wish with the iPhone 12.
Do tell.
You don't know what that feature is? Everyone was pining for it. They were like, please, Apple, please do this. Please, we really want this. Number one most needed and requested feature.
Dumping lightning for USB-C?
Well, actually, that wouldn't be useful. I can't wait till they get rid of that. That's old lightning.
Yeah, it's
they made it thinner. They made it thinner because everyone was saying this phone's not thin enough.
Right. Well, I mean, people go like, I'd buy an iPhone if it was just thinner. That's like,
not more battery life. Why would we want that? We just need it thinner.
Yeah,
thinner. We just need it thinner because that was we I don't know how we're going to live without it.
Do you care about the MagSafe stuff? I think it's nifty as can be. That's spoiler.
It's I like it. I was actually bemoaning a little bit in my tech group. I wish they went a step further. And could you imagine if Apple released a regular outlet with a magnet around the outlet plug, so we could slowly move away from the regular three prong plug to a magnetic kind of outlet plug, and everything would become that over time. But I think it's a wonderful solution to their failure to provide the AirPad or the PowerPad, whatever they were going to call it, right?
AirPower,
yeah, because you could never quite align it the right way, and you were afraid that it was going to short things out, and so just by putting this magnetic ring on it, it will always be in the exact right spot. It's a nice way to secure things. The little wallet that they add that can piggyback on the new phones, I imagine, will be very popular, and I imagine third parties will start making attachments like crazy. And you could even see that people will use that to make cool attachments like extra lenses and stuff, right? Yeah, because now they got a natural like little magnetic snap-on lens thing that people could do. So a lot of cool innovations probably going to come from that. I liked it a lot, and I like that it's 15 watt charging through that. I don't like that they didn't, that the what is it called, the Q charging or Qi charging, I always forget the name of it, the Qi, thank you. The Qi charging is still limited to, I think, just, was it 5 or 7.5 watts? So it's not as fast as the new MagSafe charging rate. And I just don't know why you wouldn't do that, because it's more likely you're going to encounter those.
Is that a limitation of Qi?
I don't know. They do have 15 watt charging with the Qi chargers too. So I don't know, but whatever. It's not a big point. Yeah, it's a lovely little thing. It's great. Apple's going to probably at this point, use up all the world's magnets because everything is magnetized.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pleased with this. I was really upset when they took MagSafe away from laptops.
Yeah,
I'm glad to see the concept sticking around and being used in such an incredibly useful way. And this is one of those like little things that Apple sometimes does so incredibly well. I mean, we haven't tested it yet. This actually could suck. I don't expect it to, but it could. And my point being that this is going to be one of those little things that makes these devices all that more usable in ways that you don't even think about. Easier to use.
I agree. I hope that they reintroduce it for the laptops at some point. I have yanked my laptops since we've gone to the USB-C ports.
Of course you have. Of course you have. Because that's what that's... all right. Listen, let me take a second out and tell you about LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs, that's this week's sponsor. Very, very happy to have them. Of course, LinkedIn is a worldwide community. They have more than 690 million members around the world, which is fantastic. And what they do with LinkedIn Jobs is they make it easier than ever for you to find the right candidates for the job openings that you have. And more specifically, and I think this is probably the best thing that that I've seen, if they've got they've simplified the UI so that you can manage your job posts and your contact candidates all from a single view. They've taken all the functions, they've streamlined them. Everything is on one simple screen, and that makes it a lot easier to manage those job postings and those potential candidates, and that's fantastic. Now, LinkedIn Jobs also puts your job post listing in front of people that are qualified for that job. That makes it easier for you to start finding the people right off the bat that are going to be a good fit for you. And now, of course, you can also do all this from your mobile device. And that means that you can pretty much manage hiring from, you know, wherever it is that you need to. And that's just absolutely fantastic. Now, because you are listening to the Apple Context Machine, you can get $50 off of your first job posting. All you have to do is go to linkedin.com/ACM. One more time, that's linkedin.com/ACM. And that will get you $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply, of course, but it is a fantastic way to get going. If you're looking to hire and you want to find the right people, you absolutely and positively have to go check out LinkedIn Jobs as a great way and a great place to do it. All right, John, now the other thing that we wanted to talk about today is 5G. And you seem to have something. I have no idea what you actually want to say about 5G.
So 5G, I think, is almost... I'm viewing it as a conspiracy theory. And in this way, everyone keeps saying 5G, and by everyone at this moment, I'm thinking specifically of the financial services press, which, you know, it's hard to find what's more loathsome than the tech press and the regular press, but it might be the financial press. And they're like, it's going to cause a super cycle of Apple phone sales. And the average consumer, my grandma, my aunts, could care less about 5G. LTE in most places is plenty fast. And I'm not saying that, you know, 640 kilobytes of memory is all you will ever need. But what I am saying is that for the vast majority of the buying public, it's not compelling enough to be an upgrade point.
It is in the rest of the world.
As the large screens were for Apple when they were stuck on the 3 and 4 inch screens for a long time and everyone had moved beyond, that was a compelling reason for the average Joe to upgrade. 5G currently is a nightmare in the US. The only provider that provides any speeds worth a darn is Verizon. And then and even there, it's only in very limited places.
And AT&T outright lies. I am looking at my iPhone 11 Pro that does not have
5G.
Yeah, right. And it said 5G. I think my iPhone 10S was saying 5G. I mean, like, AT&T just outright lies. Lies.
You don't understand. The AT&T elves snuck into your house, dismantled your phone, reprogrammed it, put in a new 5G chip, and magically you got 5G. What's the problem?
Yeah. And it, you know, it just happens to be as slow as the rest of the AT&T network. And it's interesting to me along these lines. It is interesting to me that if you remember, of course, Singular was the launching partner for the original iPhone.
Yes.
And then Singular bought AT&T's wireless business and changed their business name to AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And AT&T/Singular has figured into Apple's iPhone launches in one way or another for pretty much since then. And this time around, Verizon, a company that actually butted heads with Apple, Verizon fought their inability to sideload their crapware for years onto the iPhone.
Yeah, before they finally gave in.
And
with the iPhone 4 mid-year cycle.
And that might have been before this current chairman and CEO. I'm assuming it was before this current chairman and CEO.
I guarantee you. By the way, he is my favorite CEO right now. That dude is my favorite
really?
CEO.
Why?
And listen, no What's matter how name? Much you tell me he sounds like the Swedish chef from the Muppets, I am not going to accept that. I'm not going to accept that that's the case. He's awesome. I could listen to that guy talk endlessly.
Hans Vestberg? Yeah, Hans Vestberg is his name. And
by the way, better presenter than Tim Cook.
Swedish businessman. Yeah, so CEO. Yeah, he is a Swede. And I don't care that he sounds. If anyone said he sounded like the Swedish, I mean, it's because the Swedish Chef was.
How dare you? How dare you?
I'm now offended. I mean, that was based on him. I mean, of course he does. I mean, like, how was it? Anyway, whatever. the point being that Mr. Vestberg got a whole lot of Apple screen time. Like, I can't remember an individual third-party company that got so much screen or stage time during a media event.
Grove, when they switched to Intel. Remember when he came on with the suit? Yeah. And that was probably the last time.
But Singular didn't get that much time. When they launched the iPhone,
nowhere
near that much time. At least that's my memory of that. So it was very interesting to me that Apple did that. It's very interesting to me that who was not on stage. I mean, we did see AT&T's logo. We did see T-Mobile's logo, right? When they flashed all the logos or some of the logos of the companies that they've been working with, but they didn't get any screen time in terms of presentation time. And there was not even a recorded message like, yes, AT&T is going to be supporting, you know, whatever. So the question is how far behind AT&T is going to lag on actual 5G, especially when they've been so busily misrepresenting what they have as it is.
So the protocols apparently, or the equipment with the protocols is in place, right? So you would be communicating technically on a 5G network. But in most of the places that have been tested with non-iPhone phones that already have 5G, in many of the places, their 5G throughput is worse than their LTE 4G throughput for both AT&T and T-Mobile. And so their networks just don't exist. They're not, you know, maybe it'll take them a year, maybe it'll take them two, who knows, to build it. But the bottom line is there's no real 5G available on either of those networks because it's just not working to provide faster speed. Verizon has for real 5G, like around 400 to 500 megabits per second. If you're in the, you know, a quarter of a mile from the tower in the right place in the right city, right, you can get those speeds, which are impressive.
Yeah, he was pretty careful to mention that it was under optimal or ideal circumstances,
right.
I think he said.
But even when it's not optimal, the speed increases are legit speed increases over LTE on the Verizon network if you're in a city that happens to support it. So it's for real only on Verizon. And that's my guess why, you know, they emphasize that, because they know that the speeds on the other networks are a joke for now. It's just not ready for prime time. And even if it were, my point is that most people don't find that extra speed compelling. Again, my aunt could care less on these things. And so wouldn't most of the members of my family who aren't techie people. They just aren't pressed for
speed. But what about all the people who consume so much of their video?
Speed, for less speed I can get. Yeah, it's fine. It works great. Like video for most people, their FaceTime works great. Their YouTube works great on LTE. They're just not feeling the pressure. Don't get me wrong. More is better. Higher speed is better. The question is it the same kind of compelling feature for the average person like the bigger screen was when the iPhone 6 came out to compel a super cycle of purchasing of Apple iPhones? And that's fake news, in my opinion. It's just not going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. As you know, I own shares in Apple, so I hope I'm wrong and they do have a super cycle. But if I'm being honest with myself and think, is that what's going to compel my aunt to go upgrade her phone? No way. Couldn't care less. So I think that that's been like a fake splinter of news that's like seeking to be disappointed when Apple doesn't sell a mega super cycle, right? And then someone's going to short the stock or something on it. It's just a misunderstanding, I think, of what the buying public is interested in. Again, I hope I'm wrong. I would love nothing more than to be wrong. And that, you know, my aunt's like, I can't live without 5G. Of course, I'm going to go get this phone. I just don't see it.
Fair enough. I can't really argue with any of that. I'm also, by the way,
do you know what will be the super cycle?
What
do you know what will be? I do think there is a super cycle coming up for Apple, and it's got nothing to do with 5G, at least not directly. And that is, if next year in 2021, as the rumors say, the Apple Glass, the augmented reality glasses, come out. And they're, let's say they're just moderately successful. Let's say they're as successful initially as AirPods were. And if we go back to when AirPods released, they remind me kind of like when the iPod released. Everyone kind of said, meh, they're overpriced. They're not that great. They're not that compelling, right? All the experts and tech pundits said that. And then it was a runaway success, right? A year later. So assuming it follows a similar trend and it does that, the reason I think it's going to really cause a lot of sales is it's going to need the newest iPhones, right? There's going to be so much processing off the iPhone. The glasses will require an iPhone for at least the first 5 to 7 years, kind of like the Apple Watch did. And unlike the Apple Watch, you're talking about needing the iPhone to do all that heavy lifting and processing and neural networks and machine learning and to do the augmented reality. Well, you're going to need the latest phone. And that will be a compelling reason for, you know, my aunt and grandma, like, to say, wow, we need a new phone for that set of glasses. That could cause a super cycle.
That could, by the way, and at that point I will accept your apologies about the importance of AR. We will, because my entire thesis was that we needed to get past needing to hold your phone in front of your face. I made that quite clear.
No, you did not.
What are you talking about?
You said augmented reality is useful on the iPhone. It is not useful on the iPhone. It is useless on the iPhone.
But it will come into its own.
Again, when we have something your list that of useful augmented reality apps. I await your list of augmented reality apps that you find regular, great, and compelling on the iPhone. Any day now. It's been 5 years. Any day now.
It has not been 5 years.
Maybe it's not been 5 years.
It's not.
It's been 3 years of any day now. There's going to be a useful AR app on the iPhone, and there isn't. It's useless.
Again, okay, all right. The point is. That another actually point I wanted to insert is remember that Phil Schiller said that there was a place for the iPhone for the next 50 years. And I believe he was talking very precisely about essentially what you just described, and that we will have more and more accessories that are being powered by the iPhone, and more and more of your data will be on your iPhone. And that's going to be your central processing unit that you carry around as the decades roll on.
I agree with the spirit of what you're saying, and I disagree somewhat. And it goes back to one of our old Pop.0 conversations. So I think like 5 to 7 years after the glasses come out, assuming they are everything we hope they are, which is like it will be, the glasses offer a potential to be as profound a change for Apple as the iPhone was from the Mac, right? Like a whole new thing. And the glasses could be that. They could be a whole new thing where, you know, you're walking around and you have your assistant in your head, and eventually 5-7 years after it's announced, it won't need an iPhone, right? It could be untethered. But where I think the iPhone still has value is this notion of a hub, meaning all your, you could put it next to a keyboard and a mouse and it will become your Mac, right? And when it's not near that, it will be your phone. And when you think about this, check out this weird, like, reverse Matryoshka doll. So you know that the next MacBook that comes out that's powered by Apple's processors, right, it will be able to run iPhone and iPad apps, right? Right?
Yes.
Natively. So think about this. The iPad Pro that we have now, hooked up to the Magic Keyboard with a trackpad, that has an Apple processor on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't they release a Mac that is basically an iPad Pro that can hook up to that and run Mac OS along with the iPad apps in that configuration?
Could.
It would make a great little Mac Pro, right? It's got the same hardware at that point.
Could be.
And then when you yank it out of the keyboard, you want it to work just like the iPad part.
Yeah.
And in essence, you have your toaster fridge, right?
Yeah, that's the real way to do the toaster fridge.
A lot of things become really interesting, but the bottom line is, you don't even need, like, all of a sudden, if when we're talking this far out in the future, something in the size, I mean, my current iPhone has 512 gigabytes of storage, and I probably have a terabyte, you know, within a release or two. And all it needs to know is, what are the peripherals around it, right? If you have a big screen and a mouse and a keyboard, maybe you want it to behave one way, and when it's in your hand by yourself, it's a different way. And yeah, all kinds of really cool things happen. But I do think if Apple does the glasses right, one, I do think it is a watershed moment. Like, it is the next paradigm. It takes us from as big a leap as we went from the Mac to the iPhone was, going from the phone to the glasses can be that. But I do think for the first 5 to 7 years, you're going to need the iPhone just to do the heavy lifting processing of it, which means I don't think there'll be a single year for a super cycle of sales of iPhones for it, because, you know, the first year will only be the early adopters. But somewhere like the second, third year in, if it's taking off, all of a sudden that will cause everyone to need to upgrade their iPhones to make use of it. And I see sales going quite high because of that. Not 5G.
I'm compelled to point out that you're saying what I was saying about augmented reality. Just saying exactly what I've been saying about augmented reality.
No.
Exactly what I've been saying. Exactly. Exactly. 100% positively. I think that you completely misunderstood what I've been saying. And that now you're on the same page as me.
No.
You are on the same page as me, and you think it's some kind of revelation.
You're playing three-card Monte misleading people. I am not. It's true. I will give you credit. It's true that you were saying that for AR to really take off, you would need something like a car application with a heads-up display or glasses to do that. That would really do it. But it's also true that you said that AR on the phone itself would be of value, and it's wrong. It's been 100% useless.
It is not 100% useless. You are saying exactly what I've been saying about AR now, and presenting it as if it's some kind of new thing.
Not true.
100% true.
Your memory's gone.
Listeners.
Fake news.
Let me know. What is it? ACM at MacObserver.com. You send me, or go over to Facebook. You can find our Facebook group at MacObserver.com.
Because they know the private bets that you've made with me.
/ context machine. That'll take you straight to the Facebook group.
Make it a popularity contest between beloved host and jerk off guest. That's going to be a fair poll.
All I'm saying is that my listeners are smart. They have wisdom. They're great, great people with excellent communication skills.
Pander,
they'll let us know the truth. They'll totally let us know the truth. Because my listeners are so wonderful. So wonderful. That's good. That's good. All right. Listen, I want to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring us. Remember, you can go to linkedin.com/ACM. It's linkedin.com/ACM and get $50 off of your first job post. John, I also want to thank you for joining me. But before you respond, let me see. I got to play this. Super important to always make sure we get the right things. And that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, question, write me. Again, my beautiful, wonderful, probably the most attractive podcast listening group, audience out there. At acm@macobserver.com, our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for TMO. And that's all for this week, except for John. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man. I had a great time as always.
Yeah, same here. Good, smart.
Shameless.